Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Oh, I'm doing good.
Sorry, I had a bunch of... I do a weekly fishing report show. I had to bump it up this week because my traffic guy at the small radio station I work at is gone at the end of the week. Normally, we do this as like a Thursday-Friday deal, but I had to get it done early this week. And then all my guide contributors were trickling in late tonight, so I was like, oh, my God, trying to squeeze in dinner.
Long day, huh?
It wasn't really a long day. It's just like... all of a sudden, everything was like conspiring right at this moment that I had this podcast planned.
Oh man, I got you. Well, I'm glad we could do it.
It's all good. At least it's you know, at least it's early there for you.
Yeah, I just got home from work.
and there, I've already hit the record button, by the way. And there is Alaska.
So yep, Alaska, that's it.
Doing something a little more exotic here that my listeners are normally used to. You're not the first Alaskan I've had on, so I hate.
I was gonna ask you if you've had somebody from Alaska before.
I have had somebody from Alaska before, but Alaska is really giant, so there's plenty of it to go around.
Yeah, who knows how close they were to me?
Exactly. I heard a interesting stat about Alaska, just to put, in case people weren't aware of just how massive Alaska is. If you cut it in half, like you did like the North Dakota, South Dakota thing, like if you just cut Alaska in half, Texas would still fall to the third biggest state in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard that it's as big as the next three biggest states put together.
Yeah, it's ridiculously massive. Yeah, it's like saying you're from Alaska is like, I don't know, it's basically like saying you're from another country. Like how many Englands can you fit inside Alaska? You know what I mean? Like that's
right.
It's just kind of crazy. But
yeah, it's even worse when you gotta take a drive halfway across the state and then it takes you 12 hours.
Yeah, no doubt. So joining me today is Gunnar Lewis, who I think I found you on TikTok of all places.
Yeah, TikTok. Yeah,
pretty sure. And now I've been perusing your Instagram page, which for anybody that wants, it looks like it is Gunner_1907. You're really old.
I think that first one's an L.
Okay, Gunner. Oh, that would make sense. Okay, Gunner.
Yeah, I'm not quite that old.
L907. All right. Well, you know, you never know. You look pretty young. But yeah, those what caught my eye was those damn Arctic char, and I was like, "Dude, bucket list fish." And then we just started chit chatting after that. But talk to me about the Arctic char over there.
Yeah, dude, Arctic char—they are freaking awesome. That's how I would describe them. They're super cool fish. They're fun to target.
They're so like, well, not all of them, but some of them are just so ornate, like. And obviously, if I went out there and I went fish for them and I caught one of the blander ones, we'll use that term, like I would still be excited because I just love catching new, you know, stuff that I haven't caught before. But if I didn't land one of them just bright orange ones, I would be a little disappointed.
Yeah, and that's typically what people are after is the orange ones, but you just never know what you're going to get when you're fishing for them.
Is that typically just the males?
Yep, just the males. Only the males turn those colors, yep.
And I know they get brighter, like, as they get closer to spawn, but correct me if I'm wrong, is that a fall spawn, or is that a spring spawn?
It's, they actually spawn in the winter.
Really?
I'm pretty sure they spawn under the ice, actually, because they start turning just before the ice hits. So if you're fishing for them like in summer and in the fall, they'll all still be that blander color. And then the males start turning as the ice hits, and then they're the orange color typically throughout the winter, and then by spring they're pretty bland looking again.
Right on. So where about in Alaska are you, seeing as how it's so big?
So I'm south central, so right around Wasilla, one of the bigger towns, just north of Anchorage.
Okay, Anchorage. I was like, Wasilla is not helping me, but Anchorage. Okay, now I have yeah. I have a point of reference now. Okay,
most people know Anchorage. Yeah, I'm just about an hour outside of Anchorage.
How's the weather there today?
Today we're actually having one of our very few bright, clear, sunny days. We don't have too many of those in the winter, so we're enjoying some sunlight right now.
That usually means really cold here, sunshine in the wintertime for us. Is it cold for you? What's the temperature?
It is cold. It's, I think we're in the teens today, but yeah, it usually feels a little bit crispier when that sun's out.
You son of a bitch. I'm not sure we got above zero today as I record this.
Oh, man. Wow.
Northern Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, you're lucky.
Yeah, we're in a cold snap. That's kind of the really first real big cold snap we've had all winter. Our ice conditions have just been terrible down here this year. Like it started good. We got really cold really fast. I was like, oh, good. We'll get a nice base of ice before the snow hits. And then the snow hit, and we just got way too much. Like, it was just like three big snow events, like boom, boom, boom. And next thing you know, slush and all sorts of just terrible traveling conditions. It's been a nightmare this year, but
That sounds pretty much exactly like what happened up here. Same thing.
Really?
We got dumped on a whole bunch of snow all at once, and then it flooded the lakes with the overflow. And so we've had a very similar situation up here.
Right on. And perusing your Instagram, I saw like you've got some like bass stuff. You're down in that Lake Powell.
Yeah. I fish Lake Powell. I've also spent a lot of time living in Arizona. So
okay, all right. And did you live near Arizona? Or, I mean, live Lake Powell, I mean, not Arizona. Sorry, an idiot.
Oh, you're good. I lived in Flagstaff last year, actually. So I was only like 2.5 hours from Lake Powell.
Wow. So where are you originally from?
Well, that's kind of hard to say for me. We moved around a lot.
You too, huh?
I was born in New Mexico. And then all growing up, we just kind of bounced back and forth between Arizona and Alaska multiple times. So,
I think that's what I was kind of trying to figure out. I was like, because the pictures were kind of going back and forth. I'm like, this guy either he's doing both or he's just posting them at really weird times. I couldn't quite get a handle on it just by going off of the pictures there. But so let's dig deeper into these Arctic char. So did you grow up fishing those things, or is this kind of a new adventure for you?
I caught them when I was young. You know, my dad's obviously been taking me fishing for a long time, and so I remember catching them when I was like 10 years old living in Anchorage, you know. But I didn't start really like diving into the whole targeting Arctic char species until maybe 3 or 4 winters ago. When I was, you know, 15, 16, started becoming a little more prominent fisherman. And then, about 3-4 years ago, I started targeting them a lot more. And then this year has been a very good year for me. I've finally started to hit on them a lot better, start getting some of the big ones and stuff.
And how do you go about, like, targeting them? Talk to me about the fish as a species. Like, what are their habits, their traits?
They are a very difficult fish to catch. These lake dwelling ones here. So they're very sensitive to the conditions. The barometric pressure affects them a lot, and temperature and everything. So, what I've learned over the years is to just pay a lot of attention to the conditions. And so a lot of things I fish are like the big shallow feeding flats, weed edges, steep drop-offs, and then sometimes the conditions will force them down into deep water. So they do spend a lot of time in deeper water when they're a little bit harder to catch. But yeah, they kind of move all around depending on the conditions.
And when you're heading out, so you said you're looking at like deep break lines. Is a little, I guess, do you have lake trout where you're at? Are they somewhat similar to lake trout?
They're actually very similar. Lake trout are in the char family, so they're very close relatives. And so in the summertime, char spend a lot of their time in like, I mean, I've jigged up char in the summer out of like 50 feet of water.
Wow.
So yeah. And they are very closely related to lake trout.
Yeah, as are brook trout, actually.
Yep, brook trout, yep.
Yeah, that's a thing a lot of people here in Minnesota might not be aware of, because they're called brook trout, but, well, much like lake trout are called trout, but they actually are in that char family. The other thing some people might confuse them with is a Dolly Varden. Do you have Dolly Varden where you're at too?
We do, yeah. Most of our rivers have them.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am, but Dolly Varden, they make kind of the voyage to the sea like salmon do. Do Arctic char do that, or are they more of a lake run species? Is that kind of what separates the two?
Arctic char, so the whole situation with dollies and Arctic char, it's kind of confusing. But from my understanding, the dollies do live in the rivers and run out to sea. And Arctic char will do that as well up north, like in the Arctic, you know, that's up there on the top coastline of Alaska. They'll run out to sea as well.
Okay.
But these ones that we have down here are lake dwelling Arctic char. So almost like if a steelhead got caught in a lake and then they just ended up staying in the lake. I think in the last ice age, some of these Arctic char ended up getting caught in the lakes, and then we ended up with lake-dwelling Arctic char.
Okay, because they spawn in fresh water, I believe, like in the lakes. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. The ones that are sea-run, they go into the fresh water and spawn. And so we have sea-run Arctic char, and we have lake-dwelling Arctic char as well. So
Do they look different?
They do. The sea-run Arctic char just get a lot bigger. Way bigger than the lake dwelling ones. And then they typically will have a little bit of blue on them along with the orange. But other than that, I mean, they're pretty much the same.
Man, I'll have to. And so that sounds like it's pretty much a year round fishery. How does that change? Like, if somebody's, not very many people visit Alaska in the winter, but I get a lot of summertime, tourism. Like, if somebody wanted to chase char in the summer, like, what would they be doing? That deep jigging, is that what they would be at, or like, when is that run?
It most likely would be deep jigging. As you know trout and any fish similar to trout are very temperature sensitive, so anytime it's warmer out, they're going to be down deep. So throughout most of the summer, it would be deeper jigging. I'm typically around 20 to 30 feet jigging in the summer. So
wow. And you're specifically targeting them, like, that's, you're going out in July and like, I'm going char fishing. That's like what you're doing. It's not a bycatch or anything like that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Sometimes I just get the itch for an Arctic char and I just have to go out.
I got to think one of the hardest things in Alaska would be choosing what to do, because you've got all sorts of different salmon species, right? At the coho, chinook, pink, sockeye, Am I missing any? I don't know. Like
this. Yeah, we got five up here. Yeah, pink, chum.
There it is.
Chum. That's the last one.
That's the one I was missing. Yep. And then you got halibut. You got all the rockfish. You got just great stuff to be had in the actual ocean. Good Lord. And then all the hunting. I see you do some caribou hunting as well.
Yeah, we do a lot of caribou. And I try to hunt in Arizona as much as I can as well. But yeah, we typically try to get at least a couple caribou every year.
You know, I saw one of your posts. I swear to God, it said something about nothing I'd rather do. And I think it was in the spring. Is there like a more spring season for caribou?
Yeah, actually, we do have a hunt that sometimes is open in March up north. And so this last year it was open, so we were able to do it. Me and my younger brother both got caribou, and they have quotas up here. So basically it opens in the fall and they have a certain number that they need killed, basically. And okay. So if it's not met, they'll leave it open all the way through March.
And so I assume they don't have antlers that time of year, do they?
Yeah.
They haven't dropped them yet.
A lot of them have dropped in March.
Oh, they can. Oh, they have. Okay. All right. That would make more sense to me.
Yeah. When you're doing that March hunt, like if you happen to shoot a big bull, typically it'll be an antlerless bull.
Is it an antlerless hunt? Like can you shoot a cow?
Yeah, most caribou hunts are open to cows. If the population of the specific herd is struggling, then sometimes they'll do bull only. But if it's open in March, it's usually either sex. So.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question. I was like, well, I would assume in the years where the population isn't great, then maybe they just don't have the spring hunt then.
Yeah, usually if the population's struggling, I mean, some years we get very low quotas where it's a very low number of like bulls only.
No, I've heard and I've never had it, but what people say elk is to deer, like whitetail, as far as table quality goes, I've heard that like caribou is another step up. Is that true?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Caribou is pretty, I mean, I love it. It's delicious.
Well, I love whitetail. So I mean, I love pretty much all wild game. So it's,
right.
And I've only had elk a few times, so I don't even know if I can fairly give that comparison. But, yeah, when then somebody said – but I know people rave about elk. But then I did hear a few people saying they're like, dude, I would trade – you know, I'd trade two elk for one caribou. And I was like, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah, they're good. It's a different kind of meat. They're very, very lean. I think it's just about the most protein-lean kind of meat that you can get. And so it's super good for like a backstrap steak from a caribou is just, I mean, absolutely delicious.
Jones for it. I had a boring ass beefsteak for dinner tonight. now I'm talking about wild game. God bless America.
Man, I don't remember the last time I had beef.
Oh, I know. I don't eat it. I don't eat it often. I really don't. I just happen to have one in the freezer. I'm like, I set that out. Like my freezer. Primarily, well, I didn't get a deer this year, so I don't really have much of venison in there. What I have is primarily goose. I do a lot of goose hunting. So,
awesome! Yeah, that's something I wanted to get a little more into is goose hunting.
Yeah, well, I wonder what that's like up there in old Alaska. I know a lot; it's a destination place for a lot of people for more of the exotic waterfowl, like your eiders and harlequins and long-tailed ducks and. First, the emperor goose, that's a big one. That's like super coveted tag.
Oh, yeah.
You can get one of those. Man, those things are awesome looking.
They're crazy.
Yeah. I'm a big waterfowler, so I'm drawn that would be a absolute bucket list for me. Like,
yeah.
Man, I can't imagine. Those things are crazy looking.
Yeah. I've done a lot of waterfowl hunting in Arizona. Unfortunately, I haven't gotten into it up here.
Which just sounds weird to hear.
Right,
like we don't.
I'm in the paradise up here.
Yeah, you just don't equate Arizona with duck hunting for the most part. But I know people have done. I know people do it successfully.
It's more of cattle pond hopping than anything in Arizona. But Yeah, and we work what we got.
It's really isolated. A buddy of mine, we produce we actually do a Waterfall Wednesday episode of this podcast every week, and he went down to Arizona 1 year, and I think he was like in the western part of the state, and there's just like, it's crazy. You put in the town name, and I don't remember what it is now, and it's like some refuge out there, and you put it in a Google Earth and or Google Maps, and you know, it zooms into it, and it's just desert, 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 and there's just literally like this oasis along this river edge that's just all green, and I'm sure they irrigate, and there's agriculture there and stuff, and there's like a refuge there, and I guess they can hunt. There's like blinds, you gotta put a draw in for it, and dude, it was crazy. It like blew my mind. I was like, this is just the wildest thing I've ever heard of, because yeah. Like I said, you don't think Arizona and duck hunting, like at all. Like that's bonkers.
Yeah, you think desert when you think of Arizona, but yeah, we get some ducks. Definitely not the best state for it, but I mean, I've enjoyed the waterfowl hunting I've done down there. We like to try and target some of those cooler species. We get pintails and, you know, canvasbacks and some of those.
Oh, nice. Is that up there, cool, like in the Flagstaff area?
Yeah, Flagstaff. We up in Flagstaff, it's mostly just, like I said, pond hopping, but we do get a decent amount of birds through there. A lot of geese hang out in Flagstaff when they're moving through. So,
huh, interesting. Again, did not know that. Going back to ice fishing here, you also got one of my other favorite fish that I just don't get to target as much. You got the old burbot there, the eel pout.
Oh yeah, I love burbot.
Yeah, they're super fun. I love the way they look, and you're getting the pretty ones up there too.
Yeah, ours are real patterned. They get that leopard print kind of pattern on them.
They look super cool. So
target burbot. Oh, sorry about that. I target burbot probably just as much as I target char. I spend a lot of time out just in my burbot holes fishing for them.
That's cool. That's very cool, actually. Yeah, here in Minnesota, we got quite a few lakes that look really cool like that. But then, like, there's really big ones that come out of Lake of the Woods, which is right on the Minnesota-Canada border. But though, for whatever reason, they're just not colored up on that. They're just dull gray, olive brown, like, just they're really drab. Now you can catch some absolute giants. But, yeah, they just don't have that cool paint job. And
yeah,
I'd rather catch a smaller one with a cool paint job, if I'm being brutally honest.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder what causes that
color. It's just the deep water, or maybe it's a little murkier water. Maybe, I'm guessing. I'm not really entirely sure. So when you're going, obviously, when you're going after burbot, you're completely different technique is when you're going for char. Like, do you catch both, or do you ever catch both at the same time?
I occasionally do. Like, I've caught actually a lot of burbot kind of by surprise when I'm fishing for char, or sometimes even when I'm fishing for rainbows, I'll get a random burbot. But that's usually later in the year. Like in March, they start heading up towards the shallower water to spawn. And,
right.
And then sometimes at night, like if you're fishing real early in the morning or real late at night, they'll slither up a little bit shallower and you can get a random one here and there, but typically they're deeper.
They do seem to like those steep breaks too. So I can see how that might happen. What kind of gear are you using for the char? Like rods, length, weight, line, like walk us through the
gear. Yeah. So I usually run around a 30-inch rod. I like a medium, something with a decent backbone, but you know, a little bit of play in the end, because the female char, those big females, they like to go on huge runs. So it's very similar to a lake trout, you know, like they'll go on a few big runs before you can get them up, and so those female char do the same thing. So I like a around 30-inch medium rod with a good backbone. I usually run 8-pound tests or 10-pound tests. I'm typically using mono, and then just a smaller size reel. I like Daiwa's, like a 1,000 size Daiwa spinning reel. And then tube jigs is kind of my favorite lure to target them. They just seem to really bite the tube jig better than anything else.
Another similarity with lake trout there. Are you ever tipping it with any bait, or is it just not needed?
Occasionally I do. If, you know, a lot of times with the char, the bite will kind of just turn on out of nowhere, and they'll just be biting everything. So, you know, a lot of times I don't need it. And then some of the lakes I fish, you can't use bait. So, like, Big Lake is the main place I'm catching them. And so Big Lake, you're not allowed to use bait.
Okay.
Which can make a little more difficult sometimes, but
sure. And on lakes where you can, like, what are your other restrictions? Are there, like, how many rods can you use? Is it two lines, one line?
Yeah, we can have two lines.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll set a jawjacker out, and I don't seem to get too many char on the jawjacker. I usually will get, like, rainbows, and sometimes even burbot will come set my jawjacker off.
Are there pike in those lakes as well, or no?
Yes.
There
yeah.
is. Okay.
God, the struggle for us to keep pike out of lakes up here.
Really?
Yeah, they invade everywhere. I don't know if it's just because we're so far north, the conditions are good for them, but it happens all the time. Fishing game really cracks down on them up here. You're not allowed to release them alive pretty much anywhere.
Are they getting in there by their own, or are people doing the old bucket biology thing? Are people dumping them in there on purpose, or, like, how are they getting in there?
That's the question. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, we do have a lot of, like, down here in South Central, a lot of our land is swampy, and there's, like, little sloughs that connect a lot of the lakes. So it's very possible for them to kind of just slither around and creep into lakes on their own. And we have a lot of float plane traffic, and so people think that float planes are a big contributor to it with the water in their floats. I've heard that.
What? So wait, whoa, hold on. We need to explore this a little bit. How is so apparently I'm just ignorant about float planes. Do they take water in their pontoons?
Yeah. So yeah, from what I understand is when they land, they'll suck in some water, and, you know, obviously pike spawn shallow. So I've heard a lot of people say that they think that when they land, they suck in some water and suck in, you know, some pike eggs, and then they'll fly halfway across the state to another lake and land, and then end up putting pike eggs into a lake. It seems weird to me too, but I've heard it a lot.
I'm sorry, but that sounds ridiculous.
I
need to learn a little bit more about how these float planes work. Like, I just assumed that they were like a pontoon on a boat. It's an enclosed system. I mean, that's kind of the whole point. Like, why would you have a float system that would take on water? I'm really struggling with that.
Yeah, I mean, some people might even just think that the eggs stick to the outside of the pontoon, or, I mean, who knows, okay. But
I guess that's a little more, like, makes more sense in my brain. And again, I'm completely ignorant of float planes. Maybe they do take on some water for balancing or a ballast or something. I don't know, but it seems odd to me.
It's a crazy theory when you hear it, but I've heard a lot of people talk about float planes hitting a lake and putting pike in it. I'm sure there are people that do the old bucket biology, and like I said, I'm sure some of the lakes get pike slithering in through sloughs and different things.
Or an eagle might drop one or something like that. But that seems pretty rare too. But now I know like pike will spawn in shallow and swampy areas, especially if there's, you know, high water runoff in the spring. They'll run up and they'll spawn in just a ditch, you know, like that happens. So if you have high water, I could see them. You know, if they're all connected waterway, it seems like you're probably just getting natural population influx. Which case, I'm a little surprised than that the Game and Fish would go so hard on them. Like, wouldn't that be in that just what happens? But I'm sure pike can do a number on the population, because they're going to love to eat those things.
Yeah, I think the reason Game and Fish just hates them so much up here is because they have wiped out a lot of lakes. Even in recent years, I mean, there's lakes that less than 10 years ago were had trout swimming around in them, and now they're just pike lakes, no trout left at all. They've wiped out a lot of lakes up here, and a couple of big ones even. One of the lakes that I fish very regularly for pike in the summer is Red Shirt Lake in Willow, Alaska. And it used to have big natural rainbow trout and burbot in it, actually. And then it got flooded with pike, and now you can't catch anything but a pike in that lake.
What are they eating otherwise? I mean, there's got to be some sort of bait fish in there then. Ciscos, yeah. Or whitefish.
There's actually a lot of food. There's tons of little mice and voles, and they will actually eat a lot of those, along with little frogs. We have these little species of frog up here that get maybe a couple inches long, and they live out in those swampy areas. And so, like, I've caught a couple of pike out of that lake over the years and cut them open and pulled out mice and frogs out of their belly.
Crazy. Yeah. That many mice up there.
I couldn't believe it either the first time I cut one of them open and pulled out. There was like two mice, a couple of frogs in his belly, and it just like blew my mind. It was nuts. So then I started using topwater frogs and topwater mice.
Yeah, I was gonna say, time to break out the fly rod with the mouse patterns and have a blast.
Yeah, that's all I do now out there is I go out and throw topwater frogs and mice, and dude, yeah, they just smoke them.
Oh man, that would be so much fun. You would think once they get in there, it might be a pain in the ass as far as Game and Fish is concerned, but it seems to me, in my experience, that when you have a lake that has pike and any kind of salmonid species in there, the pike grow fast and big.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the lakes they get into, Game and Fish will stock. And sometimes they'll just keep stocking the lake, even though there's pike in there. And so, I mean, there's a lake pretty close to my house, actually, that got pike in it. And they stock it with hatchery-grown Arctic char. And they put little 10-inchers in there, and they keep stocking it. And those pike, some of those pike in there just munch on those little 10-inch char, and they get huge. So now it has some char and a lot of huge pike.
Giant pike. Well, match the hatch. Throw some sort of lure that looks like a char. 10-inch swim bait sounds like the perfect thing to use.
Right. Yeah.
If I had to guess, that'd be my go-to bait right there. That's nuts. You know, there's another crazy, weird theory. I guess it's a theory, hypothesis, whatever. I know they've done some research on ducks transporting fish. I don't know if they've done experiments with other fish species, but I know with carp, what they have found, because ducks love to eat carp eggs in the spring when they're spawning.
Right.
But what they've found is that some of those carp eggs are able to make it completely through the duck's digestive system and still be viable. So what ends up happening, obviously, is ducks go in there, they gorge themselves on these carp eggs, they fly off to another pond to go relax to something that didn't have carp, and next thing you know, you got carp. So I wonder if, I would assume if it happens with carp, it probably happens with a lot of different fish species.
Yeah.
So to me, it would stand to reason that maybe the ducks are spreading the pike around and not float planes. That seems more logical to me.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a real possibility. We definitely have a lot of ducks up here. And I know that pike eggs are pretty resilient. And pike, when a big female pike spawns, they lay a lot of eggs. So,
and you would think early in the spring, like, now we're going down a conspiracy rabbit hole here, but I mean, not really, but you would think in the spring, like, pike are one of the first ones to spawn. A lot of times they spawn, I guess I can't speak for up there, but I know down here, before the ice is even really off the lakes, but the streams and rivers are running and they're ice free, the northern pike are already going up the streams and spawning. So it's going to be as ducks come back up from the south, it's going to be one of the first food sources that they really find, because there's not going to be anything green really growing yet. not going to be much for bugs. There's no crops, so.
Yeah, that, I mean, that definitely sounds like a very legitimate reason right there why the pike would be moving. More reasonable than the float plane thing, probably, to the ear.
Well, for my mind, for sure. I mean, I know that, like I said, I know there has been study on carp eggs, so it's not, I'm not just like pulling this out of my butt. Like, this is a real legit thing. I don't know if they have done the experiment on other species fish eggs, if maybe carp are just more durable or not. That I have no idea. But one has to assume that, like these fish over the course of time have gotten to all these other waterways somehow, right? Like just before man invented seaplanes, right? So like how did that happen, right? There has to be some other natural mechanism at work here, whether it's giant flooding or I don't know what, probably multiple things, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And me personally, I love catching pike, so I do a lot of pike fishing in the summer. So, I mean, when a lake gets pike in it, I'm the guy that's like, well, shoot, who cares? You know, I'd rather catch a huge pike than a 10-inch.
Yeah, pike are a ton of fun, especially when they get big to catch.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, that bucket biology is probably also could potentially be a likely source, because I can definitely see somebody that's just like, I don't give a rat's ass about those char, you know, I just like fishing for shore and I like catching big northerns and just like dump, dump, dump. You know what I mean? Like people do that. I mean, they just do. It's for whatever reason, it's a thing, you know?
Yeah. And the pike, in my opinion, kind of work well in these lakes that I fish with the Arctic char, because I mean, pike aren't really going to do anything to a 30-inch Arctic char, you know, and same thing with like the big burbot and stuff. And so the pike that are in those lakes are eating a lot of the smaller fish, you know, like the younger Arctic char, which I feel like just creates better habitat for those bigger Arctic char, you know. You know, when you have a lake that has a million little tiny Arctic char in it, it's kind of hard for them to grow as big. So we have big pike in these lakes that eat a lot of the smaller ones, which make more room for the bigger fish to thrive. And so, you know, I when I catch some of the smaller pike in my lakes that I fish for Arctic char, I'll kill them. But I usually don't target the big pike just because, I mean, they work well, you know, they don't destroy the ecosystem in these lakes that I fish.
Yeah, the big pike, you know, they eat one big meal every now and again. You know, the pike, as far as predators, the ones that do the most damage, they're kind of that, like, mid-20 range to, like, low 30s. They're the eating machines. They're the ones that are just, like, they're just eating nonstop, anything that'll fit in their mouth.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that, you need to take those out. And it just seems like in lakes here, like the lake where I'm at in northern Minnesota here, so many of that smaller size that they're so annoying. Like, they're just not fun. It's like, oh my God, just another hammer handle, you know, just another little 20-incher. Like, would you just stop? Stop stealing my bass jigs. That's what I really want you to do.
tear up your swim bait and stuff.
Yep, you cast up there, flip in there, whatever. You feel a little bite, you set the hook, and there's just nothing there. You're just like, ugh.
Right. I'll have to send you a video. In that lake out there, Red Shirt Lake, you can catch those little frogs by hand. You know, if you see something, you can grab them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken videos before of throwing them out in the lake in some of those shallower bays where the little pike hang out, and I've done it a bunch of times, and I don't think any of those frogs have ever lasted more than 10 seconds.
Oh,
you throw them out in the water, and within 10 seconds, a little pike will come up and just slurp them up.
Wow!
I'll have to send you one of those videos. It's the craziest thing. Like, it just shows you how keen they are on that food source. When you throw one of those guys in, they just munch it.
I mean, sorry for the frogs, but I feel like I would personally put an impact on the local population of frogs, because I would have an absolute ball doing that and just watching it.
Oh, man. Yeah. The fill up a water bottle with them or something.
Yes, just sit there. I'd take my break, lunch break down there, and I would just have a bucket of frogs and just be tossing them out there. Yeah. You know? Splash.
It's a
splash.
Fun thing to watch. Yeah, absolutely.
Poor frogs. But yeah, I mean, frogging down there, artificial frogs, God, that'd be fun. I mean, there's not much. In the fishing realm, there's not much that's more fun than a topwater bait of any kind for any fish. I don't even care. Like, that's just, that's yeah. a fun bite.
Absolutely, yeah.
That visual 100. Strike. Yeah, that dude, that's where it's at. How big do these char get? Like, what's a respectable char, and then what's, like, an absolute giant?
Yeah, so typically, if you get anything like in between 25 and 30 inches, that's a very respectable char. And then if you hit 30 inches and over, that's your monster range. We call it the 30 inch club around here.
Okay. So 30 inch would kind of be the benchmark. Like if I went there for a trophy trip, that's what I'm looking for, a 30 incher.
Yeah. If you wanted like a mount worthy fish, 30 inches is the monster range. That's like your 50 inch muskie, or
okay,
that's a monster.
Like, how realistic, like how many trips am I gonna have to make, how many hours am I gonna have to log to get that 30 incher?
Well, like I said before, they can be very difficult to catch, and they usually are, so that might take you a lot of trips to get the 30.
Do they, but, you know, closer they spawn, does it get better, kind of, you know, like a lot of other fish, or no?
Not really. I mean, like I said, they're very sensitive to the conditions. So if you want good fishing, you just gotta be here when the pressure and the temperature and everything is just right and they're feeding.
I would also want a pretty one. I mean, that's the other thing. I feel like I would sacrifice a little bit of size-wise. Like, if I were to head out there, for sure in my mind, I'm like, a successful trip for me would be getting, I would say, something in the upper 20-inch range that's all colored up, something that I can get a good replica made. And
yeah, I would, absolutely.
Like, for me here, like, to get a walleye on the wall for me, I need, same thing, 30 inches. That's my, like, that's my basement. To put a walleye on the wall, and I haven't caught one of those. I've gotten so much claw. I think my biggest is like 27 3/4 or something like that. So, and then that's still a nice fish. When you get your hands on it, you start questioning your minimum requirements. But then you're just like, no, I gotta stick to it. But part of it, knowing that I just can't fish for char whenever I want, because it's gonna be, you know, likely a one-off trip if I ever get to do it. I think I would have to acquiesce a little. I think I would bring my minimum requirement down a little bit.
Yeah, and that's something where, like, as long as you get one of the males that's orange, I mean, even like a 25 or 26 incher that's orange, that's mount worthy. I mean, I'm getting one mounted right now. I've already put a down payment down to a taxidermist, and it's 26 inches. So not the 30 incher, but it's like the most perfect orange, good looking male nice. I've ever caught. I mean, it was nice and fat, and had, you know, the colors were like, it was like a blinding kind of orange. And so it's not even the biggest one I've caught, but I've pulled the trigger on that one. I'm hopefully going to get a mount here this year.
Are you doing a skin mount or a replica?
Replica.
Okay. I feel like that's the way to go with those salmonids, because they're so oily. They seem to turn out better.
Bright orange is, I think it'll look good as a...
Oh, God. They're living pieces of art, man. Those things are just... They're so amazing.
Yeah, they're insane. And when you pull one out and have it in your hands, it's almost like you never feel worthy holding a fish like that. It's so beautiful, and you know, and then hard to catch too. I mean, it takes time to get one like that. So
right on. Yeah. Well, God, man, I need to. I mean, I've been wanting to go to Alaska for a long time for many reasons. Like I said earlier, like the hardest part for me would be like, what the hell am I going to do? I want to hunt. I want to fish. I want to ocean fish. I want to catch shrimp. I want to catch crabs. I want to do the whole deal. But
yeah, that's the thing. It's just trying to figure out what to do. And yeah, there's all kinds of stuff all summer long.
You do any other kind of big game hunting up there? Do you ever go for moose or anything like that? So are you a full-time resident of Alaska?
Yeah, I am. Okay. I was living in Arizona in 2021, but I moved back up here to start guiding, actually. So, yeah,
I'm full. Very nice. Okay.
And so, yeah, hopefully by next winter.
By next winter. I was going to just ask you. I'm like, oh, so you're guiding for these things. So next winter, you'll be guiding. So when would you recommend coming for, like, if you're targeting char, what is like the perfect calendar date to make that trek?
Perfect calendar date. Early ice is usually when a lot of the real nice char get pulled out, the real nice orange ones. So up here, I mean, I would say end of November, maybe beginning of December. Okay. When the a little bit thinner. It has a lot less ice fishing traffic because the roads aren't plowed yet on the lakes. And then those the orange on those fish is usually really good early ice, like December. And so, yeah, I would say about end of November, beginning of December.
Right on. Okay. I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, you know a guy now. So.
I do. I know a guy for sure. You know, we'll work something out. Not that I need much excuse to get me to Alaska. And again, what else is there to do in Alaska at that time? I feel like that's like in the heart of hunting season. I'm going to be so conflicted. So like for you, like what would be like a resident moose tag? Is it expensive? Cause I know for like non-red, like a moose in Alaska is like crazy expensive for me to do.
Yeah. Most of the like harvest ticket tags we use up here, like over the counter tags, are free. So for residents, if you want to go pick up a moose tag or a bear tag or caribou tag, typically it's free. You just show up at Walmart and say, hey, I need a moose tag, and they write it out and give it to you. So all of the over the counter tags are free for residents.
That's it. I'm moving to Alaska. Screw this. What? I can get free moose tag?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're a resident, non-resident, yeah, it's very expensive for one of those over the counter tags. I think a brown bear, grizzly bear tag is like $2,000 or $3,000.
Yeah, I think it's like $5,000 for like a, well, I mean, this five. Is Yukon territories, which I guess isn't Alaska, it's Canada, but you know, a Yukon moose is like, I think $5,000 at least.
Yeah, sounds about right. And yeah, and obviously if we draw a hunt, we still got to pay the draw tag, but it's nothing more than just any other state's fees usually.
That's bonkers. Pretty... dude. that's just absolutely bonkers.
We got the animals up here and a lot of people, you know, need meat and stuff, so I think it's just we have the land and the animals up here, so yeah, you can go get a tag and do just about anything you want for free.
Have you had any interest in chasing those doll sheep?
It's on my radar, but not yet. I mean, I'm sure at some point in the next few years, I'll probably go for one. I've kind of always wanted a mountain goat, a little more than a doll sheep.
Okay.
And I don't know why.
Their coats are cool, for sure. You know, yeah. I would have to say for me, like, well, I would love to do both, but the coats are cooler on the mountain goats, but the headgear is more impressive on the doll sheep.
Yeah, and that's like a something that every Alaskan needs to do at some point is go get themselves a nice full curl doll sheep. Yeah. And so I'm sure I will at some point.
And that, I mean, you're a young fella, you're young and spry. Like they talk about that sheep getting in sheep shape, you know, like chasing those things. It's not easy. You know, I've watched read articles and watched a fair amount of shows on it. And, you know, weather can just screw you. You know, you get up there and you have a 5-day hunt and it's just like absolutely fogged out for four of those days and you just can't see shit. and you're just stuck at camp because there's nothing you can do. Like,
yeah,
that would be so brutal.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. A good friend of mine has a big outfitter's business and does a lot of sheep guiding. So my dad actually is one of his assistant guides, so he does some hunts for him. And they've even had a lot of issues just the last couple of years of the sheep populations getting super low, from sickness and just different things. Eagles, a lot of young sheep, actually.
Really?
Eagles will affect sheep populations too sometimes. So that's something that they're struggling with the past couple of years is just finding sheep.
Wow. I had no idea. I'd never heard that.
We get all kinds of crazy conspiracies up here.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my God. That could be a pastime in and of itself. Just go into a local pub somewhere and just start stirring the pot about different. You could start light, you know, before you get too inebriated with the plains and Northern Pike and then work your way into the. Like, what are the crazy conspiracy theories about reasons the doll sheep numbers are down? I can't wait to hear this.
Sickness is something that affected them a lot too, is a lot of them got sick. And so, yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle for them.
What's the crazy conspiracy theory about them? Like, what do people think?
The doll sheep?
Yeah.
Well, the eagles is one thing that people think, when the doll sheep are young, eagles will basically like grab them and throw them down, you know, down a cliff.
I have seen some videos, maybe not with bald eagles, but I know like I've seen it with like big golden eagles and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's what I've heard about the doll sheep is with the bald eagles. Like they'll grab I don't know what you call a baby sheep.
That'd be a lamb.
Lamb, that's right. Okay, yeah. So they'll grab a little lamb and fly them out and just drop them, and then they got their food.
Right.
And so that's the conspiracy theory I've heard.
Okay. There's just too many eagles. People are saying there's just too many eagles. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And they're out the sheep. So that's probably a little more believable than a float plane.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know that. I mean, man, I feel like. If it was that big of a problem, I feel like you could take a weekend and go out there with a spotting scope and watch it happen. You know what I mean? Like if it was common enough to affect the population, I feel like that would be an easy, not even conspiracy, like just I feel like that's a relatively easy theory to prove with minimal work.
Definitely easier to prove than a float plane. That's
than a float plane. That's pretty entertaining, actually.
Well, I'm gonna have a little more research into that now.
Yeah, we'll do a follow-up because right. I'm actually gonna go down that rabbit hole myself. I've never heard a float plane being the reason for fish. Now I've heard like maybe not going into other, well, wouldn't be going into other lakes, but like firefighters, you know, those planes that go down and they scoop water out of a lake and they dump them on a wildfire. No.
Oh yeah.
I've heard crazy stories of, you know, like finding fish hanging in trees and, you know, and they're like, well, it's probably from that, but I guess it also could be from an eagle caught a fish and put it in the tree. Now there's a crazy ass urban legend about like a scuba diver being found dead in a tree before. And yeah. Whether that actually happened or not, no idea. Probably not, but I've heard the story multiple times, so you know how those urban legends go. But you know, some guy's out there diving for whatever and the plane comes along and scoops him up. I don't know. I don't know how believable that is either, but
might be for your kids, who knows?
Right.
That's crazy though.
Yeah, that is pretty wild stuff. So you're starting guiding next year. Hopefully, that seems to be your plan.
That's the goal.
Yeah, and is that going to be mostly ice fishing then, or you do it in the summertime too?
I'm going to start out in the ice fishing season, and then I'll probably do some summer stuff as well.
Do you move around? Do you move around a lot when you're on the ice? Are you doing a lot of hole hopping? Or are you kind of like staying put in one spot? Are you using portable ice houses or anything like that, shelters? Or are you just out there on the ice?
I usually do a lot of moving around. Okay. I like to hit different spots. I like to try a lot of new spots, you know, as often as I can. The only times I'll really sit is when the fish are in those shallow feeding flats. Cause then, you know, they're just up there cruising around eating. So when I know they're up there in the shallow flats, I'll put a tent up and sit. I'll sit all day, you know, so in the same spot, you know?
Okay. What kind of electronics are you using?
Right now I just have a cheap little sonar, the Garmin Striker 4 that, you know, the one they sell every. And then I have a little AquaView camera. That's all I'm using right now. I'm gonna buy a new sonar here in a couple months. I'm gonna get one of the Garmins that has the eco mapping feature so that I can map out a couple of these lakes. So I have good bathymetric maps.
Do your own charting. You're gonna do that in the summertime, I assume. Run around the boat and chart it.
Out there.
That's pretty wicked. That'd be pretty fun.
Good excuse to go out and fish.
Yeah, because you need one of those.
Right.
Finding an excuse to fish is not that's not too hard. That's not too hard. Yeah, I would think. So you haven't dabbled in the world of like the forward facing sonars, like the live scope and stuff like that?
Yeah, not yet. I would like to get one eventually for sure.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. There's a guy who guides on my lake locally here who uses one to target big char. And so he's figured out how to use that forward-facing sonar to find the big char and then get them to bite even when they're in the deeper water.
That would be interesting.
I'd like to get one and, you know, do whatever that guy does because he catches big ones.
Right, yeah. I'm going to have to team up with that guy. Just pick his brain, uses, you know, as best you can.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll apprentice you.
That would be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Any other big plans you got coming up for your outdoor stuff? Or is it that's kind of where you're putting your chips in that basket?
That's what I'm doing right now. That's my main focus. I'm just working a lot, saving up, trying to get the equipment I need, you know, snow machines and different things. And so I'm, pretty much putting my chips in that basket and spending a lot of time on the lakes, trying to dial in the fishing really well and, you know, stay on the big ones. So,
how much ice you got up there right now?
We've actually had a really warm winter this year, so we're sitting around 24 to maybe 30 inches.
Okay, so you're really not that different than what we got going on here in northern Minnesota. Yeah. So,
you guys seem to have some pretty cold weather down there. So,
yeah, Minnesota's like it's when the jet stream dips way south, we get blasted. You know, we're probably the coldest place in North America, North Dakota, Minnesota. You know, we get hit pretty rough. And of course there, you know, you got the ocean that kind of keeps you a little bit more temperate, I think, at times.
Yeah. I mean, Wasilla, we are right on the coast, sea level. I mean, we're right here, basically a coastal town. So
yeah.
That definitely a lot warmer. If you make a drive up into some of the interior lakes, like up in the tundra, that they'll definitely have a lot more ice. A lot colder temperatures, but
for sure.
I get some warm weather down here. So
the light thing is still an issue. Like what time does it get dark?
Oh man, it makes it so hard. It's we're finally starting to get some more light. It's I think sunset is at 5 o'clock right now in the afternoon. And so, you know, I can skip out of work a couple hours early and go hit the lake. I couldn't do that a couple months ago.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of crazy to me. I feel like that would be more drastic because that's right about where we're at. It's about 5 o'clock.
Yeah. And I think during the winter solstice, the darkest day, I think sunset is like 3:45 or 3. somewhere around there. And then, the sun rises at like 11 or something like that. So during late December, early January, it's very dark, very dark. But yeah, we're starting to get light back now.
That's that whole thing. That's a whole other rabbit hole to go down this bonkers, too. Just to think, because people think it's even weird here. Like, my friends in the southern United States, where they're just like, why is it dark already? I'm like, because it's winter? What? Like, that's just nuts. I'm like, yeah, but then they come here in the summertime, and it's still light out at 10 o'clock or quarter to 10, and they're like, this is wild. I'm like, well, yeah, welcome to the globe, buddy.
Like, how it works.
That's what happens when you fall asleep in science class. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. And it's really hard when you go out for a day of fishing and you have like 4 or 5 hours of daylight, in the heart of winter. You don't have too much time.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick before I wrap this up, are they a low light species? Does that seem to matter? Or they kind of bite all throughout the day?
They actually, for me lately, they've been biting a lot during the low light hours, just as it barely starts to get light in the morning. And then as it's getting dark in the evening, they definitely have a little feeding frenzy thing that happens, like a lot of other fish species.
Okay. Yeah. It seems pretty typical. So, just wasn't quite sure if that drastic of changing light cycles played that big of a role, but it sounds like it does.
So, yeah, it definitely helps the bite a lot.
Cool. Well, Gunnar, I appreciate you taking some time out and having this conversation. This was a lot of fun. You'll have to keep us posted when you get that guide service fired up. Shoot me a message. I'll have you come back on and pump that out for you.
Yeah, that sounds great. And let's try and get you up here one of these days.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll see. I need to. I really need to get to Alaska. Like, I really, really, really do. Of course, in my mind, I'm like more. Like everybody, I'm kind of in my mind doing the summer thing, but
yeah,
tickets to Alaska in winter are probably cheaper.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah.
So
find a hotel in the winter,
right? Yeah, find a budget. I it has to happen because I do need to catch one of those Arctic char. They are so cool.
They're very, very cool. Yeah,
I have to budget in. Like, part of my trip is going to have to be the taxidermy bill. Because that's why I'm going there. Like, legit. Like, that is why I'm going there. To get a just turned on bright male char. Right. Like, that's what I want.
Nothing looks cooler on the wall than a big orange char. So.
Dude, I'm telling you, they are one of the coolest fish that swim, man. Just pure aesthetics. They're, like, they are awesome.
They're amazing.
Yeah, they're so cool. Well, let everybody know where they can find you. They want to follow your adventures.
Sorry, I didn't hear you cut out for a second there.
Oh, sorry. I said let them know where people can find you, follow your adventures, your social media.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, my Instagram, I think you said it earlier, is just Gunner_L907. And then my TikTok account is just Gunner_Lewis. I don't have any social medias for my guiding yet because I haven't started it or anything, but if people want to follow me and stay in touch for when I do start guiding, just my normal Instagram, people are more than welcome to message me on there. And so yeah, that's where I posted most of my videos and stuff.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. I watched a few of them, and checking out your photos, it's really not healthy for me to do that. Like, I start daydreaming really bad, but
well, I'm gonna keep posting, so
yeah. No, I look forward to it. It's great. I'm glad I found that TikTok page. I'm glad I stumbled upon you, and this was a lot of fun. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
All right, I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right, dude. Well, we'll talk again.
All right, yeah, we'll stay in touch for sure.
Awesome, dude. Later.
All right, bye.
Bye.
In wild country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.